Welcome to Canine Hijinks, the podcast where crazy agility people talk dogs, the dog sport lifestyle, and the sport of dog agility. Join me, Alyssa Looney.
And me, Whitney Taylor, as we explore the sport of dog agility, reflect on our learning, and have a lot of fun along the way.
Welcome back to Canine Hijinks. We are here today with Fanny Gott of Sweden. In person,
whoop, whoop.
Fanny just finished judging day one of our Mad Hatter ISC Cup at Crow Creek Dog Sports Center, and it was so cool to be able to have our international judge not only design, but be here in person, so we're really happy that you're here today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We thought that since we have Fanny here, it would be a great time to record an episode about start lines, especially because at our camp last weekend, it was definitely identified that a lot of people have trouble with their start lines. Peyton is always telling me I'm breaking my start line. And Fanny's pretty good at teaching start lines. So let's talk about start lines.
Let's do it.
So to begin with, there's really a lot of different kinds of start lines. Off the top of my head, I can think about you set your dog up, you lead out, kind of straight in front of them, and then release. So I would say that's kind of a traditional start line. There's courses where maybe you don't really need a start line that much. You just have them sit. Maybe you just take a step or two and then you're off and running.
Tunnel start a lot of times.
Tunnel start in AKC is very, very popular start. You might need to be more lateral from your dog. So maybe you're 10, 15, 20 feet to one side and maybe a little ahead or not. And then I'd say there's, especially in the last few years, rising popularity for the send-away start, where maybe you're sending them towards the wall, and then they're coming back into the course. And so they might need to be looking forward while you're behind them or even behind and pretty lateral. So there's a variety of ways your dog might have to start running a course.
I would say, too, like extreme slices can pose a challenge for certain dogs. Like if you don't actually train that, they can have a tendency to have it do a run by or something like that. Trying to think of all the start lines I feel like I don't have good skills on with Sprite, because it's like always on my list to train more types of start lines.
We had one come up. We set up a course from Fanny last week in class, and it was kind of a send away start, and there was a layer, so there was another jump. And that actually came up in the last ISC trial, too. It wasn't a layer so much as there was a tunnel in fairly close proximity to the start. And so even though all they could do a send-away start when there weren't other obstacles in the way, the distraction of that other obstacle, she was very confused. So that'd be another complication. So let's start with the basics then. How do you start teaching start lines to make sure that they're going to work?
So your start line has many components to it. So when I start with a puppy or a new dog, there are different parts of the start line behavior that needs to be trained. So starting with how do you line your dog up? Finding a good position for them and teaching them to do that quickly and have good fluency so that you never have to nag your dog at the start line. So that's one part. Then the second part is the sit. I like to have my dogs in a sit. We'll probably discuss different positions later on, but I train my dogs to sit. So with a puppy, I make sure that they can sit with me feeding them in any position and that they don't move their feet. So for the start where you need to be behind them or laterally away from them, it's very, very nice to have a dog that doesn't move their feet. Because then they'll still face the same direction as when you left them. And it makes it more clear. Like, it's a clear criteria for not breaking the start line. And then the third part is having a good release cue, but also a strong behavior to send to. So if your jump cue isn't strong, then you'll have trouble leading out far because the dog will not commit to the jump when you cue it. So that would be the third part of it. And I train the release right from the start when I start with the puppy, holding their feet still. Even before I add the sit cue, I'll add the release, because anytime I work on steadiness, I want to make sure that they know when to finish the when to quit the behavior. And when that's rewarded and when it's not rewarded.
So starting at the beginning, then there are sort of the list. People put their dog kind of in a heel and they'll sit. Sometimes people have the dog come between their legs. Sometimes there's a sit, sometimes there's a down. Is it just personal preference? Does it depend on the dog? What are your thoughts on choosing a start line sort of behavior position?
So I used to have my dogs line up by my side, and I think that's fine if you can get them to line up nicely on both your right and your left. Now I have them come in between my legs, and I think that's just easier for a formal start line, because I see what they see.
Mm-hmm.
They're in line with my eyes, and it's easier to keep them straight, especially if you don't have like a good heel work on both sides where they keep parallel to us. So I think that's just easier. Some dogs might be too big for that.
Yeah, I guess some, huh?
Yeah.
I think, so Fractal lines up between my legs, even though most people laugh because he is not actually good at it. I have to squeeze his butt to keep him from shooting all the way through my legs. And I've been told like, well, that's you're just managing the bad behavior. And I'm like, yeah, but it works for us. So he knows, like, I squeeze, you stop, you lie down. And he sort of would choose to lie down often. And so I just went with that. Whereas even though Sprite will actually now go between my legs, she is such a soft dog. She doesn't even like it when I reach over her head to like try to get her to stretch to her butt to give a cookie. And so I was like, I'm going to work more on the heel work and have her line up at my side, because I think competing in the pressure and then going between my legs, that would feel like a lot of pressure for her. So that was kind of how I have chosen my couple of positions.
I often find, especially with my border collies, that they have sometime around when they're puppies, they don't really want to come close. And then I put in a campaign like be close, and where I work with more luring too, because I usually shape most things, but I want to be able to lure my dogs and have them chase food and be happy and intense about it. And when I do that, I teach them to weave between my legs, come in between my legs, and just anything that's really close to me. And I try to, so with a puppy, if they didn't want to come close or felt pressured by that, I would put a lot of work into getting them comfortable with that. But if you then find out when they're older that maybe that's not the best start for them, then fine. It doesn't matter if they line up by your side or between your legs.
But you should do the work. You should do the campaign.
That's what I do. I try to at least when they're young, to work on their weaker sides. Like, try to build that up. And then at some point, you might have to leave some things that you didn't succeed with, and work more on your strong sides. I think use the dog's strong sides. But I would definitely work on it for any dog, but especially a puppy. I wouldn't just leave it at they don't like to be close to me, or they feel pressured by that, or because in agility too, running, I want them to like to be close to me, that they're not pushed away by my being close to me.
Yeah.
Ollie was largely the very opposite. She wanted to be like inside my skin, you know, all the time. And when Peyton started teaching classes here, she wouldn't go away from me. She was like the stickiest dog, and I had to teach her a lot more about you can go away from me, that's okay. And starting to reward off my body and some of that kind of thing too. Why do you prefer a sit over any other position for your start lines?
So a few reasons. Sometimes it doesn't matter. And it's fine to have different types of start lines. I remember my first working Cocker Spaniel did not like to sit when it was wet. Mm-hmm. And I just asked her to stand. Mm-hmm. And she complied. I asked her to stand and she waited. So that's fine. But for, especially with the border collies, the down is something that's so natural to them and also puts them a little bit in herding mode. And I don't really want that. I want them to be open and thinking about doing tricks instead of herding when doing agility. So that's one reason. Another reason is that you can set them up closer to the jump.
Yeah.
So when I work with jump grids, I sometimes set them up very close to the jump, and they couldn't do that from a down. Mm-hmm. And also with some of the slicey starts where they go back to you,
mm-hmm.
I set them up very close if it's a close turn or a mm-hmm. tight turn.
Right.
Especially if there's off course obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really see the point in having them come with a lot of speed and then putting the brakes on and turning and gaining speed again at a start line. So I will set them at different distances depending on how much they turn on the first jump.
Mm-hmm.
And with a sit, they're more balanced. They require fewer strides mm-hmm. to clear the jump. So that's why I like the sit.
Yeah, it makes sense. I would struggle sometimes with Fractal in the down and when he's a big, big strided dog and when there wasn't a lot of space, then I'm like, oh, I can't, you know, back him up kind of as far as I want to type of a thing. So I can see that makes a lot of sense to me.
And even the stand requires at least a stride more for them to be balanced
mm-hmm.
if they're not very, very far rocked back, like almost a sit.
Right.
But if they're stretched out, they will need at least a stride more. So with the sit, they're like loaded and ready to go, just 4 feet down to take off.
That makes sense. And so what do you see people do that breaks their start line?
I would say 95% maybe of start line problems is a problem with not knowing what releases the dog, that neither the dog or the handler really understands what the release cue is. Dogs will always pick motion as a cue if they can over verbals. So if you release with motion and a verbal, it's probably your motion. And it's mm-hmm. easy to test. And I've rarely seen a dog that won't release on motion if they're used to having both.
Mm-hmm.
The other way around, they're not very likely to release on the verbal if they're used to always be released on motion.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with the release on motion is that it's not very clear.
Right.
Because we move all the way leading right. out. We might move our hands. And a lot of the time, we're not even aware of what's releasing the dog. So that's, as a judge, I see it a lot. As a trainer, I see it even more. And dogs are just not sure when to go. And handlers are not aware of what they do, what's mm-hmm. releasing the dog. And so many times I'll see either release on motion or release on the dog's motion. That's a very common one.
That the handler sees them break and then they say the word.
And then they just say the word and start running.
I can think of a couple of people right now that I'm like, oh yeah, they do that all the time.
Yeah, and a lot of the time they're not even aware.
Yeah.
It's just something that, like, stress response from seeing the dog move. And
I've done that too.
Yeah. I think we all have.
Yeah.
Just eventually learned.
I'm like, well, they're leaving. I might as well say the release word.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like I have some control.
Yeah. Or just you see them start moving a little bit mm-hmm. or like
they're twitching
or looking like they're about to break the start line
mm-hmm.
and then you release. So that's a timing problem. But the even bigger problem is not knowing what your release is
mm-hmm.
And not being aware of that. And I see so many dogs that are maybe sometimes confused, but often also sure about what the release is. And it's something very different from what the handler thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so I'm pretty convinced like 95% of start line problems lies in the release. Because ask anyone with a start line problem if their dog can sit at home if they lead out 20 meters. Everybody will say that's no problem. Right. Even in training, it might not be as big of a problem as it is in competitions. And
Ollie is very consistent regardless. We have the same problem no matter what.
See, and that's funny because Fractal is, he's very quite twitchy in like a class type situation, but I can get a start line. Whereas like I took him to a competition and I'm like, there were no start lines happening. That was not a thing. And I know, and I will work on it in class, but then kind of forget, or I'm not thinking about working on it in a trial. It's, I lead out almost the exact same amount of distance from the jump if it's a more traditional start line. The hand goes up, right? And or the head goes back.
Yep,
or if I'm looking at him and then I look away, he releases on the look away. Must be time to go. So I know there's quite a bit of that that I have sort of built in over a long period of time where I didn't quite realize, right? I'm saying the word as I'm bringing the hand up. I've paired those two things very nicely. And so it takes a lot for me to work back through that. I mean, at almost 10 years old, he's got a very long reinforcement history for releasing on.
I would think the problems, it's harder for you than for him. Yes, when we're consistent, it's fairly quick. It's like the dogs like the clarity.
Yeah.
They just go, oh, that's the release.
I think that is the hardest part, and probably the piece that the handlers get really frustrated with their dogs not having a start line, right? But they don't realize that they're the one causing the problem, right? So then they put the blame on the dog. You know how to stay. You should know how to stay, blah, blah, blah. But they don't realize that they're doing some certain motion every time, and it is really hard.
And it
to
can just be
awareness.
A finger flick, right? Yes. Like pretty small.
Or the slight tip of your head, like you said, like, right? They figure out that if you're not looking at them, that once your head turns back to look at them, you're going to release them.
Yep.
And then they anticipate that. And so now the head turn becomes the release. And then maybe just the slight twitch of your head turning. Mm-hmm. And then maybe if that is one thing that I noticed when I was trying to campaign for Ollie's, EOTT cues is they were all on regular AKC courses, and so I did tend to lead out almost the exact same
distance
every time because that's what those courses required.
Like.
And so she started to just anticipate based on where I was walking out to.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you get more anticipation problems when you release on motion because it's less clear.
Yeah.
And so do you lead out, stand very, very still, and just release with the verbal? Do you do a, and I guess we should talk about that, like, versus a moving lead out?
I tend to stop, and I think that's because of my control issues. I want to make sure, like, everything's under control, the dog's looking at the jump, and I can lead out far. So I very rarely feel like I'm in a rush.
Makes sense.
But there's nothing wrong with moving as you release, as long as you don't change that movement.
Right.
So if your hand can be out, you can be walking, you can be running, you could even be sprinting, as long as it's the verbal that's the release, and you don't change anything.
Yep.
And I would say it's even harder for people to keep the same movement when releasing, when running. Not for everybody, but sometimes it's harder to know what you're doing. So it might, maybe I would start standing still and then work on the moving releases. And I think part of it is that the jump cue or whatever cue you use for your first jump or tunnel, we never have tunnels as the first jump in Europe, but you do. But the jump cue isn't trained enough. So when you lead out, you feel the need to push the dog to the jump.
Yes.
And that creates the problem.
Right. That makes sense.
At least makes it worse.
Right.
But it's also a band-aid that's difficult to use once you get to a certain distance. It's much harder to push them to a jump that's far away.
Right.
So it's kind of...
I like that topic, and so we can talk more about your sort of focus cue that you have for that first obstacle. In that same course from the class the other night, it would have been really nice if I could have cued Ale with my front cross already done and had her take the jump.
Right.
But she could not do it with any kind of lateral or sort of backwards lead out unless I was also facing the jump.
Yeah.
Right.
And so
that's, that's part of my problem too.
So I could not get her to take the jump if my front cross was already done. She was going to come into that layer instead of the correct
jump.
Can you talk a little bit about your focus cue at the start line?
Yes. So first of all, I think it's good to have have the dog be able to focus on the first jump. But it's even more important to have that strong jump cue, because that will be your release and that will be your reward for the focus. And if they don't really know the jump cue and the behavior that you want from them at a distance, it's much harder to get the focus.
Right.
And if you have a really strong jump cue, you get away with not having the focus a lot of the time, but not with that layer jump.
Yeah.
Because that makes it harder when they then look at you and there's a jump in between you and the dog, you release, they're going to take that jump.
Turn around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So definitely great to have focus on the first jump.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a cue for focus. I have added one and then realized that I often nag it. Like, I use it when they're not really sure. And then I start going, focus, 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 focus. And it takes me, like, it's, I think last year when I talked to you, I talked about cues as green lights.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the focus cue should also be a green light. But that's where I failed a little bit, because I've used it more when I've pushed it too far. So I would say, sure, add a focus cue if you want to, but make sure that you work the focus first. Offered focus works just as well. And then you can add it as an added safety, but it should be a green light.
Right.
So don't focus so much on the cue. Focus on the behavior.
Right. Well, and if they don't move when you set them up, that would, I mean, that sort of
help.
That helps a lot, because it means you should be looking at the thing that I set you in front
so
of.
My hand up, pointing, like, hand up still towards the jump is also a cue for focus. So that's the first thing I would do on a lead out that requires some lateral distance, and especially if I'm behind the dog, is I set them up facing the correct jump. I just take a couple of steps away, point to the jump, and they look at it, and then I lead out. I put my arm out again, wait for them to look at it again. I'm okay with them breaking focus when I lead out, so I feel like they might want to see where I went. I don't know. You could probably teach them to just keep focus too, but my dogs are allowed to look at me, not move feet, but look at me. And when I put my arm up again, I want them to focus, and I will release when they look at the jump. So the verbal cue's not that important. You can add it, but don't misuse it.
Do you ever find, if you're using that focus cue and you release once they look back at the obstacle, that they start to think that turning their head back is the release?
No. It's about timing again, I guess, and not pushing it, building the behavior so that you can have a second or two of looking at the jump before you release.
Okay. Yeah. So not immediately. It's not like, look at it, release.
No, it's like,
look at it a moment.
Yes.
Then release.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. And you can start working the focus, like, when you put their food bowl down for dinner, or with a toy, or anything that they want.
They want to look at.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And just start that very easy, and then build in distance, distractions, and then making sure that they release on a verbal only. And then once they know that, on rewards, you can work it on one jump. And you don't have to lead out far. Just make sure you do all the different positions. You can be slightly behind them, out to the side, and just build that strong focus behavior. And then I find that distance is much easier once you've got that, especially with the verbal release. Because when you release with motion, sorry that I keep talking about this, but it's so important because when you release with motion, your dog will be so much more likely to want to look at you. Because mm-hmm. that's where the action happens.
Right.
So they're staring at you, waiting for you to move something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having a harder time looking at the jump.
Well, they're also not, they don't have their listening ears on if they're doing that
no,
either,
no,
right?
No,
they're
no.
like, oof,
yeah.
oof,
yeah,
oof,
so,
twitch, twitch,
twitch. Yeah, exactly. So a lot of the time when people try to like throw their dogs at the first jump, it feels a bit like throwing darts. You're mm-hmm. not sure what's going to happen.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, they'll take it, but they might as well just turn and come. Mm-hmm. running to you or take another jump. Mm-hmm. So that makes it so much easier for them to listen and focus when you're further away because they know that looking at you won't get them anything. It's
right.
It's the verbal. And what you said about the listening ears is also helps with your verbal cues in general. So even if I start at the middle of a course, and I don't really set them up, like, between my legs, lead out,
mm-hmm.
They might just be by my side, I try to just send them with the verbal to the tunnel or the weaves or the jump, because that's how I build my green light cue. They're still listening, I give the cue, that's the green light, they're allowed to start. So every time I restart a sequence or in a course or just a skill, I build that green light and I build their listening for the cue.
Mm-hmm.
But if I reset by just sending, I'm not working my verbals. I'm teaching them that my motion is the most important cue for taking a tunnel or taking a jump. And as we've seen in the trial today, there's a lot of dogs that think that motion towards a tunnel means tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even if we cue weaves or something
yep.
like that. And we have to remember how important motion is to dogs, which is good. Like a lot of the time we can use motion as a reward and motivator in mm-hmm. agility. But it's also a problem if we want them to listen to verbal cues.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make them important for the dogs to find them interesting.
Yeah.
Because they would love to just go off of motion, but it would be hard to get the finer skills.
Right. Well, and as I discovered today, if tunnel to tunnel is available, unless I have really quite impeccable timing and positioning, I'm getting tunnel, not tunnel threadle, not tunnel weaves, like whatever the other thing is. It's like, got it. And so I think, and that's something I've been dealing with because I was, you know, I had a very soft dog and to try and get her excited, I used a lot of motion. Mm-hmm. The game is fun. I promise the game is fun. And so now I'm sort of trying to walk some of that back without making her sad. So,
and that's an interesting point and something that I try to talk about when I teach. So motion is very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
Most dogs love to run with us and love like the action and excitement. So make sure that you use that as your reward and not
as a reward.
Yeah, and not as a lure.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I will see people run really fast and be really intense until the dog does what they want. And then they have the most boring reward ever where they like bring up something from their
pocket. Then they stop and they've got to dig and then they have to break the cheese off.
Yeah, and then they shove it into the dog's face. So motion... Like the reward is more boring than the lure,
right?
And that of course creates dogs that love to just run to tunnels or whatever they enjoy. So make sure use motion, but use it wisely. Use it as a reward.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be standing just a few feet away from a jump, giving the verbal jump cue, and as the dog takes the jump, you take off running and have them chase you.
Mm-hmm.
Or just thinking about, am I using the fun thing as a lure or as a reward?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's always better to use it as a reward.
Yeah.
Ugh, that would be... we hope to do an episode with Peyton about engagement, and that is a huge piece of engagement, that you're not using your motion as a lure, but rather you're using it to reward their choice to engage.
Yes. Yeah.
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 Mm. That'll be a good one. Anything else we need to hit on about start lines?
So I'm going to ask it, even though I kind of know what the answer is, but I think there are going to be people listening going, but my dog is so twitchy, like that I feel, mm-hmm. I feel like I've done all the things and no matter what, like they're always wanting to break. They're always pushing me. I mean, mm-hmm. always that kind always of dog. And it just feels like I can't focus on anything else because I can't get the start line right because my dog is so pushy, like that they're really frustrated. Do you have any extra specific advice for those folks?
Yes, but
they're not gonna like it.
I don't know. Just make sure you're not releasing with motion. Make sure you're not making it too hard. So what I would start with, if my dog was too excited to do a start line stay, I might just feed them beside me and wait for a moment of stillness and then just give the verbal cue. And if you find that your dog's not responding to the verbal cue, which is likely, I'd say, then that's maybe where you should start. Make it even easier to like teach the verbal cues and use them as your release and as a reward for stillness, but break it down and never with the pushy dogs. If you go into conflict with them at the start line, that's what you're going to get and they're going to win. I've never seen a case where the dog doesn't win eventually. So don't never, ever go into that conflict. Think of it as a fun game. And to be able to do that, you might have to break it down, make it easier. But if my dogs break a start line, it happens very rarely, actually, but it could happen in training, like they anticipate something. I just laugh at them and go, huh. Wow. And we do it again and I might challenge them even more and then release and reward. But I would never try to put pressure on them or make it into a conflict. Because I think you'll lose. And some of the dogs even like it, I think.
Is it possible to fix start line problems in a trial? Like, if your answer is, my dog doesn't have a start line, so I'm going to enter more trials so I can fix their start line and make sure that if they break, we're going to go back, we're going to restart, etc. Is that the way to fix it?
Well, it seems cheaper to fix it in training first and easier. and if you think that your dog never breaks a start line in training, you're probably wrong. I've seen very few cases of that. But if that's the case, then call me and I'll try to set something up. But if it is the case, then yes, you have to train in trials or make your training more trial-like.
Right. Well, and because that was something I had to do with Fractal. That was my rule, like when we were very seriously competing was, and it was after they introduced Fix and Go, so I could do it. If he broke his start line, I went back and reset. And if he broke again, we left. And when he didn't get the reward of getting to continue to run, which is what he really wanted, it helped. Good dog, because I was probably still doing a lot of the things wrong, right, that you're talking about with the, I mean, I was trying really hard, but doesn't mean I was doing great at it. But we did get a lot more reliable, but it had to be 100% my focus. I could not let it go. That was what I knew. I could not let it go because he mostly would break in a trial. Like he could certainly break in training. I'm not saying he was that good, but he was a lot less twitchy. And so I think one, it's training. So I was a lot more consistent about resetting him in training and he'd get to a trial environment and go, well, she's not going to reset me. I can just get away with it. So they are smart about context. So that I do think that can be true, but you have to just go in and not want any cues that day. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we reset a start line and had a clean run, but probably because we had a good start line and I could actually get the lead out that I needed. Right.
And it forced him to control himself.
Right? Yeah.
He had to be thinking to
get the start line. There are very few clean runs as a result of a broken start line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very few. Because something usually goes wrong very quickly after a broken start line.
Right.
So yes, the more work that you do in training with yourself and with the dog, the easier the transition to competition will be. Because we want the same thing, right? We want to run agility.
Right.
And it's just about finding clear criteria for how that happens.
Well, and I do think it's important to make the point, too, that because you're saying very few clean runs happen, I would say on international style courses. In AKC, and in some of the more sort of, I'll just say, compact American courses, you don't need much of a start line. You don't have to, because they're going to turn immediately.
Yeah.
And you're you're not trying to get anywhere, right? I mean, it's hard, it's rare for me to break out of a trot on those. So partly, I think what happens where people get frustrated is their dog is always breaking their start line, right? They're saying the word right as the dog's releasing, but there are no consequences. But then when they need the start line, they don't have it.
Yeah.
And they don't realize it. And then they get mad. And so I do think that there is, it's very often that we have a pretty broken start line in many of the venues in the U.S., but doesn't bite you in the butt until it bites you in the butt.
Yeah.
And or you come to an ISC trial and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't understand. Why can't my dog stay? Because you actually need a lead out.
Yep. Yep.
Or all these other kind of behaviors of the send away and lateral and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think there is that.
Yes.
Right. If you never practice a longer lead out, you can't expect them to automatically have it.
No.
Right.
In trial.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. I mean, you might even, maybe they do have a good start line for 10 feet, but you never push to 15. So there's that. But I think that most people don't have good start lines and get away with it and then are mad when they don't, when they need it.
I would agree with that.
And the good thing about all the foundation work or like the important training that you do in this is that you don't need much.
Right.
You might need a jump.
Right.
But
to practice it at home.
Yeah. If you can do anything with one jump, it's going to be so much easier. So I don't think you need to, you need to be consistent at a trial.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, it happens more with teeters because they are, it's hard, so hard. Like sometimes I've felt that they stopped and I released, but I got faulted and I look at the video and I was like, I released them on the middle. I really thought that they were in a 2-on-12 when I released, but clearly not because I was faulted and I look at the video and it's, my release is so early. So I've had more trouble there and keeping criteria. And like teeter, it's like a start line in where I don't have that control.
Yeah.
Like
teeters are hard.
Because it's full speed and it's so quick.
Yeah.
I feel like I've got it under control now mostly. Also because I've worked on my dogs not releasing if I release them early. Like
behavior has to happen.
If I cue jump as they like put their paws on the teeter, they're not allowed to fly it. They have to go into a 2-on-12 before they go, and that's given me a little bit of like they help me out. But that's hard, and that's where I've had to with some dogs go in and think there's no cue happening. I just have to fix this. If and be so aware of it.
And feel, that's more about your awareness than theirs.
Yes.
Right.
And that's why they are perfect in training, but not in competition, because they feel that difference too.
Yeah.
But there's no point in having a perfect teeter in training if you don't have it in trials.
Or a start line.
Or a start line. That's very true. So I felt that need to actually and especially to have my focus there. So, like the rest doesn't really matter. This is my focus.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's kind of the overall thing to think about is you're better off to fix it now,
yes,
and finger quotes, throw your money away, mm-hmm, than to just let it go, build more reinforcement history for what you don't want, and then go to fix it a year later. Like, you've just thrown away all of that money for a year, mm-hmm, and just kind of put off the inevitable. So, like, stop letting it go. Fix it now.
Yes.
You will be much happier in the long run.
It's but just... also see what you can do in training. Because there's probably a lot of things that can be...
A lot.
Because
the first step is realizing what you are doing.
Yes.
Right.
Because usually it's us doing something that they're releasing on and we don't realize it.
Yep.
And that's what Peyton always gets after me for. Because I think I'm standing still. And then as soon as I hit the release, I like...
Yeah.
Twitch,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so I'm not actually standing
and
still.
That was when I ran Ollie. All we were doing was wing rep dog walk in camp, and I thought I was being so good because I know you've been working on it about standing still, and I watched one rep and I bouldered to the wing, right? I was still, but then on the release, I was pushing. I was like, well, at least I got stillness, I guess, but I was so mad at myself, right? I was like, man, all right, nope, not doing any good at that. But that's why I mostly do a moving lead out with spray and just just run and say the word because I feel like otherwise I twitch. I'm like, I'm more consistent, I feel like, with the moving lead out. But the send away starts, I know I always release with motion too there, so because I don't trust her to take the jump.
So two more things that I was thinking about. One is, do you go back and reward for holding a start line? Is that something that you would do?
That's a good question.
I do sometimes, especially with Leo right now. Mm-hmm. I have found, he has a very hard time with stillness just in his whole life. Like, stillness for him is the hardest thing ever. And so with him, when I'm trying to increase my distance, I will go back, feed, lead out a couple more steps, go back, feed, maybe do a quick couple steps, go back, feed before we ever go forward, because stillness for him is so, so hard. Mm-hmm. I've also done before with Ole, and I've heard that some dogs hate that. Like, it's kind of aversive to them to keep them sitting there longer. But with him, it really does make a big difference that he starts to, like, settle into the sit and quit anticipating, and he'll start to do the little roach forward, you know? And the other thing I've done with Ole before is put her toy behind her and released her backwards instead of forwards, so that she kind of quits anticipating so much of the forward. Mm. So I have done that before, but like if I were to go back and reward Ole with food, she would just think I was stupid.
Yeah, I don't do that. I don't like it because I think it's counterintuitive because I want the release to be the reward.
Mm.
So, I mean, it works, like, definitely do it, but it's just funny, right? That's just a different sort of philosophy that I would rather make it easier and release and then and run away and reward like that personally.
Yeah, so I agree with you both. I don't almost never go back and reward my dogs for holding a start line. The release is the reward. But if I'm working with a young dog that has the wrong idea, like you're talking about the pushy dogs that start to like go into a stare and get low and twitching, then I will go back and reward them with food and decrease my distance and just feed them. And is that a reward or a punishment? Who knows? But we do it.
Depends on the dog.
We do it until you relax, and then you get released.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a very low quality reward, I would say, for them, because they just want to run,
right?
But and if they're not able to eat that food, then we're definitely not in the right place.
Like, right, that gives you information about frame of mind. That's a good point.
So with a dog like that, I would still work short distances, but I would feed them for being still, but I would not release until I see them relax more and stop twitching. And so that's where I would...
Your job is just to sit here right now. That's it. That's your job right now.
Yeah.
And then accept that.
And then when they accept that, then I can release them with a verbal jump, and then reward with a toy, mm-hmm. or maybe food, depending. But so that's when I teach them to sit, I use lots of food, like very, very high rate of reinforcement to make sure they understand the difference between moving their feet and not moving their feet. Mm-hmm. So it starts with very high rate of food reinforcement. I also with puppies do some, especially with the border collie puppies, it's quite easy to have them offer a sit and then walk away with a toy in your hand that they're looking at. And that can give you some stillness to reward.
Right. That's what you did with Leo last year when
yeah,
you were here.
Yeah. It's like a shortcut to getting some distance, mm-hmm. like leading out, dragging a toy and then releasing them to grab it. Mm-hmm. But the most important part is with food and just not moving feet. So that was one thing that I was thinking about. The other thing is using a release word or using the first obstacle cue. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
I've finally got talked out of using a release word, I guess, is the way I would say it.
I think you still do both, actually.
I think I probably mm-hmm. do. I think you use both. Often. Well, and because Fractal, I never really changed with him. So, depends.
I use the obstacle cue because there's not enough time to do the release and the obstacle cue. Mm-hmm. And also because okay and then the does next not obstacle. Mean take the obstacle. Okay means you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
So I give the obstacle cue.
Yep.
As yep. my release.
And I guess it was when I felt like there were so many jumps out there. I mean, that's where then kind of the focus and feeling yeah. like you're getting them to focus on the correct jump. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like, and it was a particular point in time where I ran into two or three courses in short succession where it was like, if you just said jump or over, even if you kind of had them pointed the right way, that was like, you know, two jumps kind of next to each other. And I was like, that's not helpful. But like I said, I was basically told to knock it off. So I just like, okay, uncle, I can't give.
Yes. So I use the obstacle cue as my release for a few reasons. One of them is that, like you said, there's not always enough time to give information on what you want the dog to do. Is it a tight turn? Is it a normal jump? Is it in... like not on a start line, but starting a sequence, it might be a backside, might be anything. And when you release with a break, they're going to think of something and then you have to steer them away from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens on a teeter when you release them,
mm-hmm.
that's where you really see that you might say, okay. And they're already in the tunnel
right.
before you can tell them to go to the backside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one reason. Another reason is building that strong green light effect for your verbal cues where the dog like really listens and wants them.
Mm-hmm.
If you use just a generic release, that's what you build a lot of value for, but you're not using it anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really use it to your advantage, like this, having them wait for the cue, hearing it and then executing the behavior.
Right.
I still have a generic release if I ask them to sit and then just want them to get up.
Mm-hmm.
But in obedience, I wouldn't ask them for, like, give them a release between every behavior I ask of them. So, like, if I ask them to sit and then call them to heel, I say, sit, heel. I don't have to say, sit, okay, heel.
Yeah.
or sit, okay, down. It's just a new cue. Some people seem to think that dogs get like have better start lines if you use just a release, that just one word that releases
right.
you.
Right, that was basically yeah. sort of how I was
yeah.
brought up, if
yeah.
you will. That right. that's clearer for them.
Yeah. I don't think that's true. It's about just making it clear that you're releasing on a verbal cue that you know,
mm-hmm.
Or. Because if I just tell them, like, praise them, they're not releasing.
Mm-hmm.
They will release on a new cue, but they'll think about it. Like, if I haven't, like, sometimes I add cues from a sit and just give the new cue, which might not be the smartest thing, but they'll think about it and then they'll try something because I make it very obvious what they're about to do and they get rewarded. So there's some gray area there.
Well, and I think, you know, when I was originally sort of taught about the importance, the sanctity of the release word, those start lines were much more straightforward right?
That there was, the dog knew.
Take the thing in front of you.
Yeah.
That was what it always was. And typically on those courses, I was, if I was using verbals, because I was mostly just directing the dog around the course with motion. Yeah. I didn't have any verbals. Mm-hmm. The only real verbal I had was the release cue in it. And that's probably debatable, right? Yeah. Like going back and looking at it. And so I wouldn't necessarily say, okay, over, okay, jump. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If it was you like jump, okay. You just said, okay. And you started running and they did the jump and the tunnel and the jump. And, and so
that's what I did 15 years ago too. Yeah.
Right. And so in that sort of setup, that makes sense, but you know, the sport's always evolving.
Yeah.
And so just have to take new information under advisement. And
so another argument for using a generic release is that some people want to tell the dog what to do first. Like they'll ask the dog to sit and then they'll say, jump, 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 jump. Okay, jump.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
Some Europeans do that where they want to like give the dog information of on what's coming up and have the dog listen, 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 then okay, and then do the behavior. I just don't like it.
That seems very confusing.
Because I think dogs already, like, they should know on a start line based on your position and how you set them up, what the first, like, what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Which then could be an argument for just using okay or break because they already know.
Right.
Somewhat, yes, you could do that. They focus on the jump, you lead out, you make it very clear where they're going next. Mm-hmm. You say, okay, that's fine. But you're not getting that, building that green light.
For the obstacle.
For the obstacle cue. Yeah. And that's, I want my dogs, when I tell them jump, I want them to be like, I want to see them do something.
Mm-hmm.
And should they're be certain that it's the jump.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Yeah. So I've felt that dogs trained that way don't understand obstacle cues as well, because the obstacle cue is not what releases them. Like,
right.
It's not the green light.
Right.
The brake is the green light.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Well, I'm hopeful that this discussion is going to help some people with their start lines. We probably do have some video we can post of breaking them. Yes, we've done plenty between us. Fanny, thank you for being here today. And thanks for joining us after a long day of judging.
Well, thank you. It was nice.
So that's all for today's episode. Don't forget to rate, share, and subscribe to our podcast so you can join us for our next episode. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or by visiting our website at www.caninehijinks.com.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to go out and have some fun with your dogs. Talk to you next time.